You want answers? I think I'm entitled. You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, Dante. It's a really, really word, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's not good. I'm standing in a window, so I'm shouting through the water, and I'd like to get the information. That's my feeling of what blood makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise. And I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Well, blood does make noise, and so do we. Hi, everybody. This is Dave Hodges, and I am the host of the Common Sense Show. And we are officially in our third and final hour. We come to you live every Sunday night at this time at 5 o'clock on the Pacific Coast, go to 8, and on the East Coast, we go from 8 to 11, and you can fill in the middle. And our thanks go out to our very first guest, Dr. Ted Brewer, a good friend of mine. Don't forget about the great products he has available at healthmasters.com, and you can take 5% off being a listener to the show using the promo code 5COMMON. And also, too, I want to mention to you that we do have storable food available, and I can't believe how many people are not prepared. Any disruption can stop the just-in-time delivery of the 3 to 6 times a day deliveries of food to your grocery store. And how long did it take in Houston for those shelves to be empty? A day. Not even a day. That's why you need to protect your family. Get started with Numana. No glyphosate, no GMOs. Great pricing, great restaurant quality, and convenient delivery. Go to numana.com/Hodges. And use the promo code Hodges10 to take 10% off. Again, that's numana.com/Hodges. Well, we're joined by Charlie Robinson, and he's written a really good book, and we're going to actually promo that here a little later. We're also going to do something that we don't do a whole lot of, and kind of an experiment tonight is we might open up the phone lines. In fact, we will open up the phone lines, but let us get started, you know, and then we'll kind of give the hey sign. But that number, you might want to note this and write it down, 844-769-2944. Now, I don't make many toll-free calls. I actually had to ask Todd if that was toll-free. And he's like, what's wrong with Dave? He's never heard of that number. No, I've never heard of that number. 844-769-2944. Well, Charlie, before we take any calls, when you look at your octopus legs, is there one that really kind of occupies the position of dominance and greatly impacts the other ones?
Well, first, let me start by saying I didn't know 844 was a toll-free number as well, so don't feel bad about that. And yes, banking. I think the banking tentacle is the most dangerous, in part because it doesn't seem like it is. You would probably say military. You would think that, you know, the military control, because you can sort of, you know, it has a tangible relationship to death, of course. But when you stop, when you really take a step back and you understand how the system works, the most dangerous tentacle, in my opinion, is banking, and I don't even think it's close. So many people have been starved to death by policies that were created by bankers, shortages that were put in place specifically to kill people. You've seen famines in Ukraine back in the 40s. You've watched dictators do this to people constantly. It's never really about food. It's never really about, hey, the food's not growing here. It's a matter of not allowing it to come in, and a lot of times that has to do with restrictions that are put on them through the financial system. I think the banking system is the most dangerous, in part because it doesn't appear to be. It's sort of, you know, hey, we've got a bank. You know, you save your money and you get interest and things like that. The list of criminals that are running this world, the list of people that are doing the most damage in this planet. Are found on Wall Street. Let's just be honest about this because they manipulate marketplaces. They extract a gigantic amount of money from the system, and they provide very little in the way of in exchange for that. Once people understand the way that the the Federal Reserve, the central banking model works, it's a scam. It's a scam. It's a scam intended to shrink your purchasing power through inflation. It's a shell game. It's a Ponzi scheme. It's every sort of carnival fraud name that you can throw out. The banking system invented it, and they're the problems. And the sooner we get rid of the people that are in charge of the banks, the better off this planet will be. And, of course, they won't tell you that. They'll make it sound like you're crazy for wanting something like sound money. Oh, how dare you want, something that has tangible value, and you want to retain your purchasing power. You must be a truther or a conspiracy theorist or something along those lines, used to sort of try to discredit you for actually using your brain to understand how the system is rigged and how the game is set up against you. The banking is the most dangerous. It doesn't probably get as much play as the others, but it's done more damage to humanity, in my opinion, than anything else.
Well, they say that all wars are banker wars, so I think you're right on the money with that. And how about if you look at just the casualty figures and the civilian deaths of the 20th century, and that's done on the Democide Project at the University of Hawaii. Great, great website for information. The bankers are responsible for almost all of it. So you're absolutely right, and I do. I agree with you. Banking does permeate the other legs, as I see it. Is the control mechanism of the octopus? Is it getting stronger? Is it getting more complete? I mean, how close are they to totally taking over?
Well, one thing that has changed lately is I think that people have become more aware of it, and you're starting to see things. If people understand the power behind something like a cryptocurrency, for instance. I'm not going to promote or I'm not here to necessarily talk about cryptocurrencies all that much, but the idea that people realize that there is a way, more than anything, it shows that there is a way around the current system, and that's always a good thing to have. I think the first thing you need to do is be aware of how the system is set up, how it's rigged, and what your part is in the whole thing, and then see if you can remove yourself. Just really sit back and question, does this make any sense? The way this is set up, it just seems crazy. If it seems crazy to you, it's probably because it's crazy. Probably because you're on to something. I know it's easy to say, hey, turn your TV off and all that stuff. Listen, I love to have my TV on, okay? I'm not going to lie. And I love watching sports and all that stuff, all those things that don't mean much. But there is something to that. There is something to sort of getting away from it all sometimes and just saying, the things that I believe to be fact in this world, are they really fact? I mean, are these real, or is there a better way to do it? Inside your soul, you just sort of feel kind of a disconnect with something, the way things are. That's a pretty good indication. They would really like you to not think about things like that. And if they could prevent you from not thinking about it because they've dumbed you down, that's one really, really great way to do it. There is a guy, I have to read this quote because it's so perfect for this. It's by a guy named Dr. Russell Blaylock. He's a retired U.S. Neurosurgeon and an author, so a guy that kind of knows a thing or two. So he's talking about society, and he's talking about science in conjunction with society. He says, we're developing a society because of these different toxins are known to affect brain functions. We're seeing a society that not only has a lot more people of lower IQ, but a lot fewer people of higher IQ. In other words, a dumbing down, a chemical dumbing down of society, so that everyone is sort of mediocre. That leaves them dependent on government because they can't excel. We have these people of lower IQ that are totally dependent on government, and then we have this mass of people who are going to believe anything they're told because they can't really think clearly. And a very few people of high IQ who have good cognitive function who can figure this whole thing out, and that's what they want. So, you know, you kind of piece it together as to why they are so insistent on in spending so many hundreds of millions of dollars of propaganda money to dumb down society. Dr. Russell Blaylock nailed it. He's right. There is a dumbing down. There's a dumbing down in terms of the information that's coming out from the mainstream media, and then there is a physical dumbing down through your foods, medical devices, things like that. And then there's a dumbing down through the school system that kind of comes around the back, and if that doesn't work, then there's the confusing you down to checking you out of system where you're just like, I don't care anymore because I did Common Core math and it took me 172 steps to get an answer I should have been able to do in 5 seconds in my head, and I got it. I got marked down because I didn't do 172 steps, but it's okay because I got some points even though I got the answer wrong. I mean, I know that sounds like I'm making it up, but I'm not.
It is. It's insane. Don't get me started again on Common Core. Hey, look, let's take a break from this. Let's bring in the callers here. We're on the air with Charlie, and he's the author of The Octopus of Global Control. Terrific stuff. I mean, so broad-based.
Available on Amazon, by the way. They've discounted it, so you can get the book for $12. You can get the Kindle for $7.99.
Okay, and we're going to cover that again, too, in some depth and detail. Let's go out to the phone lines and welcome William from Kansas. Hi, William. You're on the air with Charlie. William, are you with us? William, going once, going twice. Okay, let's go to Jerry in Ohio. Hi, Jerry. You're on with Charlie.
Yeah, hi, Dave, and hi, Charlie. I enjoy your show every week and look forward to it. However, you know, I think all this nonsense with these 17 kids, my heart goes out to them, as many does, but I think the cyberbullying is what the case might be. I think all these students are raised on their iPads and their cell phones, and what they can do in the play yard, like they did when I was a kid, they do over the iPad or the cell phone, and it's the wrong lipstick, it's the wrong hair, it's the wrong shoes, it's the wrong dress, it's the wrong car. I mean, all of this stuff goes on. I think it'd be enough to drive you crazy. I wish somebody would address this, because I have called the senators to no avail, and no one seems to be interested, and no one seems to be thinking of any kind of alternative way or using their head. What is, Charlie, or your response on this?
Johnny?
Oh, I've got a good one. I think that's a great call. You're right. There was a time when this sort of stuff got settled out on the playground, and there was a limit to what you would say to someone because, A, you were face-to-face, and, B, you might get your butt whooped. And there's something about that that's actually quite fantastic. It's sort of like limits, like you sort of have to check yourself. It has moved, like you said, it has moved, the technology has moved in, and these conversations, instead of happening in person, they happen at a distance, and they happen in a way that is unnatural. So, whereas if someone goes on my Facebook page, I had a guy go on my Facebook page and just absolutely flip out on me about a couple things I said. But he didn't just do it once. He found different pictures, and then he just went nuts on this. Now, this is the guy that... So I responded to it, in sort of a funny way. Never heard back from him. Now, so this is somebody that wouldn't have said that to my face, and it's fine if he did. Like, if he has a problem with it, like, by all means, I'm not saying that I have all the answers here, but this is something that is new to this generation. That is the ability to criticize somebody from a safe distance away, where there's really no repercussions to it. And that creates a very weird mentality where you can attack somebody and then turn your computer off and walk away. Where in reality, you can attack somebody but that guy's going to have a comment back to you, you know, or it'll be in your face, and it might turn into a fight, or it might just be a discussion. It doesn't even necessarily have to turn nasty. That face-to-face interaction is crucial. It's part of why we have evolved the way we have, and why we're able to have a complex society, because we have this interaction, and it's beautiful that we have that. But we're screwing it up in a sense that we're so detached from it that there has been it's very one-sided. It's I've got my opinion, and they throw it all out there and then turn their computer off and walk away, and they don't
exactly.
They don't take the time to listen to the other side's response. And I think that can mess people up. And I think, like the caller said, you agitate somebody online in a way that is magnified. I mean, you've got kids that are like you say, you got the wrong lipstick, and keep killing themselves about stuff like this. Like, this is insanity. This is madness. And so I come at it from, unfortunately, a bit of a cynical a look at this with everything else I've tackled in the book, and that is, well, is this by design? And my thought is it very well could be. And if it is by design, either way, it's a problem. But if it's by design, it's reprehensible.
It really is.
See, the thing of it is, am I still on?
Yeah, Jerry, yes. Time for one more comment, then we got to move on to the next caller.
Okay, just an idea, just that I think it's the parents' fault and the school's fault and the public's fault that this kind of nonsense is allowed, and no one seems to want to address it.
Couldn't agree more, and thanks for the call. Well said by both, because the social interaction variable is the missing ingredient, and the self-esteem suffering is monumental. And from a mental health therapist point of view, I see that as one of the biggest problems on how our kids are disconnected through their electronics. William from Kansas is back. Let's go out to William. William, glad you called back in. What's on your mind?
Hi. I've got a very faint signal here, and you guys do a great job. I want to bring up an aspect that kind of ties the bankers into a motive for their planned genocide. And I never hear anybody talk about this. It's a biblical thing. I think it goes back about 3,800 years to the blessing and the birthright between Jacob and Esau. And down through history, as documented by people like Dr. Joseph Farrell in his books on alchemical finances and all that, he talks about how all the money has been controlled from generation to generation. And they've played the world, but the real issue here is who has the right to rule the world, to steward its resources, and to run it. And it's not talked about in churches or in schools. They don't want this subject talked about, but with these descendants whose progenitor had sold the blessing and birthright, their target is to destroy the people that it went to. And if we knew who we were and why we're being targeted to be destroyed and annihilated the way we are, that would provide the motive for why this stuff is happening the way it is. It would also humble us for not knowing where we come from, why things are going on the way they are, how they could have progressed this far in the culture. And I just wonder what you might have to say about it, because I never hear this subject talked about.
Very well stated, William. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, I could listen to Joseph Farrell talk for hours and hours, and I have in interviews. I find him to be really interesting. I don't have a background. I mean, the biblical component of it is something that I don't have the knowledge of, but I do understand that it does seem like there is a lack of respect for us. There is definitely. I feel like there's always been a plan to destroy humanity. It's a weird thing to want to do. I suppose that requires being a bit of a psychopath to think like that. It's never occurred to me to want to destroy people. But I would imagine that if you have control if you've always had control of the money system, then you've really had control of the planet. And I can imagine that that would be intoxicating. Now, would it be, does that take you to a place where the next step is you lose respect for humanity? Maybe. I mean, maybe they think this is such an obvious con game. The fact that the rest of you can't see it means I have no respect for you. Therefore, I don't care what happens to you. It's a very weird, it's a very dysfunctional way to look at humanity, but I understand what Dr. Farrell's saying when he talks about there being like a lack of respect on their end, and that they feel the right to rule. And I've never been a wealthy, powerful banker that has all that control, but I can imagine that maybe that would do something to your soul or lack of one.
May I offer a biblical sketch briefly about this history?
Sure.
If I can.
Here, go ahead.
Okay. It came down from Adam to Abraham, the right to steward the earth's resources and to be blessed. And then it was sold by Esau when Abraham died for a bowl of red lentils. Then the children of Jacob, it passed on to Joseph, who was in Egypt, who built these granaries to preserve the nation. You need food to preserve a nation. The blessing was always agricultural, which is symbolized by grain and grapes, bread and wine, whatever you will. And we see this throughout the Bible. Esau told his posterity that he never sold it. In the book of Jasher, which is really Sefer HaYashar in Hebrew, they tell the story that after Jacob died, there was a war because Esau told his sons that he never sold it, and then they wanted to fight over this birthright to rule the earth. That was 3,800 years ago, and all the intrigue and everything else can be traced down through history. Farrell doesn't use this sketch as a background for it, but he provides the details to show the workings of it. Nevertheless, Esau's posterity, which is cursed in Scripture to be small in number, they interbreed, which is, you know, in the Bible it talks about building a house, house of David, house of Aaron. A house is started by marrying your close relatives. They outlawed this all over the earth, but they do it themselves. They don't want people to know that's how a house is built. And I'm not suggesting anybody go and do anything crazy. I'm just saying that's the record.
Yeah, so, very informative. Look, I've enjoyed this exchange, but I got to move this along, and I want to thank you very much for your call, Jerry. Bill, thank you. All right, Bill in Kansas. But anyway, Bill, thanks for your call. I want to move along to Ken, who's been on hold for quite some time in Ohio. Ken, hi, welcome to the Common Sense Show, and you are on with Charlie Robinson.
Hello, Dave.
Oh, Ken, are you with us?
Yes, Dave.
Yes. What's on your mind, Ken?
Dave, hi, this is Ken in Birmingham, Alabama. Dave. I'd like to ask two or three things real quick I'll throw out. Number one, this may be old news. I did not know that in the court case where the school safety officer, Mr. Heilberg, I believe it is his last name, sued the Sandy Hook school district trying to get information, and in the court case it's come out now that he's finally gotten one of them to admit, one of the school officers or city council members, that DHS did help arrange or finance the money to get the sign out front that said everyone must check in. Were you aware of that?
No, I wasn't. Charlie?
That was Patricia Lodra, correct? The select woman from Newtown that is on the record saying they asked who put that out there, or who authorized that, and she said DHS did. Are you referring to that? I mean, I know who, there's a chapter in the book that I have that's called, You're Sending the Wolf, that is about Wolfgang Halbig, and that, of course, was a reference, sort of a reference to Pulp Fiction when they're sending the wolf. And I mentioned that in the movie, when the wolf comes to town, he solves everybody's problem, you know, the guy's problems. When Wolfgang Halbig comes to town, everybody got real nervous. And I had a ton of respect for Wolfgang. I had a great conversation with him after the book came out as well. What I did hear recently, though, was that he had been sued by the father of one of them, one of the alleged kids who died. I forget the name. He's the one who's image showed up in Pakistan as the same kid that has alleged to have died there, that father dropped the case against him at the last minute at 4:59 p.m. on the last day, because the judge stepped in and said, you know, you're going to have to come in and be on the record with your case against Wolfgang Halbig. And so the guy dropped the case against him. Obviously, they're trying to pressure Wolfgang into leaving Sandy Hook alone, because he's stirring up some real problems there, which to me is a signal that you're on the right track.
Well, yeah, I thought that was amazing that they were finally able to get somebody on record that actually happened. So when was the last time you had to check in or sign in to a mass shooting? Obviously, it was a drill. anyway. Anyway,
it's been a while. I don't know that I have to check into my mass shootings anymore. Now I think they just do that over on Facebook.
Right. Anyway, and one of the last thing, I'll leave it with you, and I'll hang up if you want to run with it. I heard a few minutes of the Alex Jones show this afternoon. He said some of the kids, now not Alex, but some of the kids now are saying that, well, none of the policemen went into the building while the shooting was going on. They apparently were told to stand down. If you've heard that one or not. So, anyway, I was hanging up and listening to your comments. Thank you very much.
You know, I want to respond to that one comment. And thanks so much for your call, Ken. I appreciate it. Let me tell you, I'm going to lay this out, and I'm not defending these officers because I don't have all the facts. Here's what I do know. That in Africa, one of the trends that happened about a decade and a half ago was when they had these kind of shootings, and they were usually in malls, the cops would rush in, and they would get ambushed by a second tier of assassins. Now, these were terrorist attacks, not psychotropic clone assassins who might have been MK Ultra. But the police in this country altered some of their approach to going in, and they don't run in like Rambo. They got to secure the perimeter. They got to make sure they're not being set up, you know, from the side or by some other unknown shooters. So I'm not saying that I'm making excuses for these officers, but they might have been following protocol. What do you know about this, Charlie?
I will start by saying that that police have a difficult job. That is a job that I would never want. They're the first to run it. I do know what you're talking about. That strategy of everyone running in, and of course, I mean, you know that's how the police would react in general, but especially if you had a school shooting, you know that is one of those sacred cows where you drop what you're doing, you run in, you grab a gun. If you're a police officer, if you're an off-duty cop, you grab your, you know, you get down there as fast as you can, and you storm that building. I know Wolfgang would tell you, as a school safety inspector, who wrote the book on that, he would say that, you know, that you are, you go directly in immediately. And with that knowledge, knowing the playbook, it is possible that the alternative to that would be to set up a secondary shooting where you would shoot, you would ambush the people that came running in. And like you mentioned, that had happened in Africa, in the mall. I wouldn't doubt that has happened, and I wouldn't doubt that during these training seminars that the police go to probably constantly, that is brought up as well, something for them to be aware of, as if their job isn't crazy and dangerous enough. You have to throw that in there. The school shooting things are weird to me. It's weird to me anytime you've got the media all beating the same drum in concert with one another. I always get a bit uneasy about that. I have obviously big concerns about Sandy Hook. I flat out come out and say that was not a school shooting. That was a integrated capstone event. That was a joint function of DHS and FEMA. And I've seen the manual for it. I mean, it is for people that have investigated it. It is alarming because it is not real. So, with that in mind, is it reasonable to suspect to take a look at the Florida shooting? Of course, it's reasonable to take a look at that. You always have to be careful because you know you're going down that path where you'll have very few supporters if you're wrong, and you also understand the disinformation campaigns that happen. And so, yes, there's a playbook when a bunch of police go running into a room, but there's also a playbook that the people that are in control have when they put staged events in. They also know that the alternative media will come running in, guns blazing, come run right in there, and there's traps set for them as well. So you always have to be careful about the first stories that come out. You always have to worry if you're not being suckered into a trap as well. So with things like this, I take the same approach that you take, which is, I don't have all the information. I'm not going to pretend to know all the information. I'll take a step back. I'll look at how things are, and I'll see if anything jumps out at me. I think you've always been very good about doing that. But much as traps are set for the police who go running in there, I think traps are set for the alternative media as well, things to be aware of.
I do, and that's why I didn't jump into this full force right away. I didn't even want to see the videos in the beginning. I was sickened by it. But I had someone close to me say, Dave, you got to look at this. You're going to cover this at some point in time. You need to look. And what I saw were videos that had been posted and now taken down and banned. And there were bodies of kids on the ground. And then another video I saw where cops came in, and they were picking up some of the people. Some were partially wounded. Some were not wounded but traumatized. And there were police carrying them out. I mean, literally carrying them in their arms. I saw this with my own eyes. So people that say there weren't any shootings, I disagree. From what I saw, this was a real shooting. Sandy Hook, I understand a lot of people feel that way. I've talked to Jim Fetzer about this. And I think a case can be made. I really do. I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying. I just have to say I don't know. What I do know is this. Is there are too many reports of second shooters not to be investigated thoroughly. Now, I know when there's this much shooting and this kind of high-powered rifles you use, confusion reigns and people can make mistakes in perception. But too many reports of second shooters, and I will tell you what a long-term friend of mine with the FBI told me, the crime scene investigation is an absolute joke. Absolute joke. Reopening portions of the school, they need to take every bullet fragment out of every body, out of every wall, off the street, off the ground, and they need to match it ballistically. And they're not doing that. That, to me, says cover-up.
Yeah. And I'm a long-time Las Vegas resident, no longer there, but lived there for a long time, and I see the Las Vegas shooting, and I hear the morning of that, the more I woke up and turned it on, oh God, here we go again. And the thing that jumped out at me immediately was they said, lone shooter. All right, well, we're here 20 years out from JonBenet Ramsey, who's in a house with her family, and they're still not exactly sure what happened here. And yet, what, CNN has figured out the Las Vegas shooting in 3 hours? Give me a break. You know, that to me is a red flag when they start saying, lone shooter. That says to me, anything but a lone shooter. So you have report in Las Vegas, you have reports of shootings in the, you know, in the lobby of the Bellagio. You have people being interviewed saying, I know the difference between somebody shooting at us in the Bellagio and somebody not shooting at us. You know what I mean? Like, it's happening in multiple places. You can't have one shooter that's happening in multiple places. So, same thing. So you hear these reports of the in the Florida school. And like I said, I don't know the ins and outs of that. But I do know you had a lot of people on camera saying, well, there were multiple shooters. Of course there were. And then as soon as those videos go away and disappear, well, that to me is a big problem, because that's an unnatural reaction to new important information from the media. If you had a real media you could trust, they would say, tell us more about this second shooter, third shooter. I want to hear more about that. But when those videos disappear, something bad is at play.
I agree. When we see the scripted response, and then, of course, the scripted interviews by CNN, and even parents coming out of these kids and saying the media is only interested in gun control and not in the victims, I have a real issue. First of all, it's depraved indifference on the part of the media. But second of all, they don't want to explore anything. They've been handed the script of what it is, and don't confuse the audience with the facts.
No. and CNN ought to be ashamed of themselves. And it's laughable for them to say that they're not scripted when you can watch videos of the 1991 Iraq or the Saudi Arabia, Scud missile invasions, and you've got Charles Jacko cramming a helmet on. You've got the buffoon next to him trying to grab a gas mask, and these sirens are going off, and they're running around in circles. I mean, it is embarrassingly laughable. And then, of course, there's the feed of them doing all this when they don't think the cameras are running, but they're mic'd up, and it's just hilarious. So for anybody in the mainstream media to come out and say that there's no such, they're scripted? No, we would never do it. CNN, you guys are the masters of, you've been doing this since the early 90s, at least, that we know of. So it's embarrassing for them to come out and sort of act offended that they're being called up for possibly scripting it. Shall we remember Donna Brazile? I mean, that's only like 2 years ago. So, CNN, enjoy your last days on air, because you guys are done, and you have nobody to blame but yourself.
You're taking me down another alley here, because it's something that I've been wondering about, and now I'm going to wonder out loud. CNN's ratings, Wolf Blitzer's number of people contacts he gets compared to me and my media contacts with audience, his are lower than mine. And I don't have a production group that's out there promoting the Common Sense Show. They're dead. They're dead men walking in the mainstream media. Now, here's my question for you. In the research you've done in your book, do you believe the social media that's still under the control of the same people that run the liberal mainstream media, is the social media going to supplant the mainstream media as the control mechanism?
Ooh, that's a good question. Probably, but they're up against you. They're up against the alternative media, and I'll take my chances with you guys, because at least, with CNN, they're lying. They've been busted so many times. Wolf Blitzer, I just absolutely demolish in my book. I have no respect for the guy. And you should read his quotes he doesn't know how he's even got this job. He's just like, I just applied for it and they gave it to him. I mean, his quotes are ridiculous. But he's full of it. The social media is a little different because it's tricky, because they can manufacture a consensus in a way that sort of looks real. So they've got people commenting on social media, they've got people retweeting things, and so I suppose they have the financial. They certainly don't have a problem trying to manipulate the media, and they don't have a problem trying to control things, but I think they have a problem with credibility, and I think that the alternative media might just turn into the real media. I'm not going to say mainstream media, but the real media, meaning when a story comes out, the alternative media checks it, and they are interested in getting it correct, not interested in getting it correct so that their sponsors don't complain about something. I think that that has, I think the introduction of the advertising model to journalism in general, but television journalism in particular, has compromised it, because there's so many multinational companies that are advertising. I mean, just look at your nightly news. You have half of the ads are pharmaceutical industries. So are you really honestly going to see NBC get to the bottom of the vaccine situation? Of course not. No, because for them to do that would be suicidal from a business standpoint, because they say the wrong thing about one of their sponsors, and then, boom, there goes half their ad revenue, and the managers are fired, and the Brian Williams is pulled off the air. It's compromised. I think that social media, probably is going to be the way of the future, but that's only if they don't get beaten by alternative media. And by the way, I'm pulling for you guys.
Yeah, so are we, but right now we're working on their platforms, and unless a number of judges come along and say these are antitrust violations because these are de facto monopolies, we're going to keep seeing the same thing. I mean, on my website, excuse me, Google used to account for 25% of my organic traffic. Now it's
0.3%.
So that's.
I'm sure there's nothing to see there, Dave. Just
there
normal.
There is. It's the same thing on YouTube. I have zero organic traffic on YouTube. I mean zero, and I'm not alone. I've got good company there. And I told this story in the first hour. It bears repeating. They'll come along and demonetize me on YouTube, and they'll say not appropriate for advertisers, and then they'll run their own ad over my inappropriate video. I'm not kidding. It's like a mockery.
It's embarrassing because they think that the people can't figure it out, and probably for a good percentage, you know, people can't figure it out. But that's a short-sighted business strategy, and the alternative media is growing. They're growing. My fear, actually, more so than anything, is that the alternative media gets compromised from within. And I think you're starting to see that with Alex Jones. You know, I think you're seeing like an unnatural response, or sort of an ignoring certain topics that used to come up, and now they're sort of off limits. That to me is a little weird. So I'm concerned about the throttling online of things like ad revenue from these alternative media providers such as yourself. I think it's obviously a horrible thing for them to do, but I also think that'll come to bite them in the ass in the end, because people are onto it, and they all, you know, everyone agrees that that's just not okay to do. You don't have to agree with everybody's take, you know. But to limit them, to pretend like that doesn't exist, and to strangle them financially by withdrawing your ad revenue, all it's going to do is make other companies pop up in its place and create a platform that's more conducive to alternative media, and then slowly drain the numbers away from somebody like YouTube, and then bye-bye, you know.
So, SpaceX is joining into this. You're exactly right. They launched today a series of satellite pods going up 62 miles where they can't be affected by future legislation from the FCC should the Democrats get control again. And they are going to be competing with the existing Internet, which to me would mean video platforms and all the other stuff that goes on. So there is going to be competition. And
who
SpaceX,
is it that you said put that up there?
SpaceX.
Oh, SpaceX. Cool.
Yeah, today. Today was the launch date.
Nice.
My son and I were watching the live feed on it, and it's one can only hold out hope. Now, people say, oh, you can't make it work, and you won't make any money off of it, and blah, blah, blah. No, if people begin to shift, Wall Street's a bunch of prostitutes. They'll follow the money. Mm-hmm. They will go where the people are.
Yeah.
They're not going to be loyal
for sure.
to YouTube. And you know what's interesting?
No. They're loyal to money, and if there's a viable business opportunity that didn't exist, you know, a couple years ago, think about how many things have come out of the blue that weren't even industries 10 years ago. So I mentioned before, like somebody like Uber and Lyft, that is something that was owning a medallion, owning an ownership stake in a taxi cab was a huge deal and a gigantic moneymaker, which is why you got really poor service, because nobody had access to crack that monopoly until Uber and Lyft came around. And then they did it the smart way, where they said, we're not taxi services, we're a technology company. And so they were able to get around the legislation and the restrictions on something like that. You know, somebody, and guess who's benefiting? The people are benefiting, because now they have more options. So the news, if it's a video platform such as, you know, somebody like YouTube, and they throttle people and they provide poor service and you know, do things in a way that is disrespectful to the consumer, guess what? There's always going to be somebody that's going to figure out a way to get around them. And when that happens, then YouTube can join CNN in waving goodbye to corporate advertisers and shareholders.
Yeah, one can only pray for the day. But see, interesting, Fox is jumping into this. Now, sometimes I'll turn on a Fox broadcast and I'll think, gee, we're listening to Dave Hodges and the Common Sense Show. Sometimes it's pretty good. But News Corp came out, what was it, yesterday or the day before, and they said, we want YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook to continue to censor the independent media. And they went on to explain why, and they were perfectly honest. There's money to be made in selling the truth. People want the truth. It can be capitalized for profit. And we want our competition gone. They were extremely honest about what they said. So
wow.
Fox is trying to replace the independent media and become the new independent media and compete against the mainstream media. I mean, how crazy is that?
I was just thinking, how crazy is it that Fox might be the savior of truth in journalism? I mean, the words can't even come out of my mouth. They sound so preposterous, but that's really funny. But in their, you know, they really are, I mean, they're not interested in this because they have systems. They've woken up and they've grown a conscience overnight. They're interested in this because it's a way to put their competition out of business. So it's about money for them. But hey, listen, if they're motivated by money, but they're able to get rid of these other monsters that have sprung up, and their method for doing that is to use the actual truth, not just the concocted version, but like the real truth. Okay, well, let's see where that goes. I don't trust them, but I'm interested to see where that's going. I don't think it's going to take much to put a couple of these other fringe companies out of business, certainly on the network side, so, you know, somebody like CNN and MSNBC. I would have guessed, though, if I had to bet, I would have bet Fox would have been the first one out of business. How funny that could maybe turn around.
Yeah, well, you know, what's interesting is I'm going to send Fox my resume this week because I'm going to tell them, I welcome your foray into truthful media, but you don't do it as good as we do because we've been telling the truth a hell of a lot longer than you, and you need people like me out there in front that know what they're doing. And then, of course, I'll give recommendations for some of my friends like Steve Quayle, Doug Agman, and, of course, Ted Brewer and company. So who knows? Maybe I'll work for Fox someday.
I know you're sort of joking about that, but you do bring something to the table that they can't pay for, that they can't just buy, and that's credibility, and it's worth it to them. And I think that your followers or your viewers or your listeners or whatever it would be if you'd wound up on Fox would probably give you a chance, not because they're some fans of Fox, but because of you. Because, and I think that maybe these networks are starting to understand that, like, we aren't credible, but maybe we can bring, maybe we've got all this money, but no credibility. Why don't we buy credibility by bringing in people that are credible? Well, that only works if you allow them to do their job. Because my guess is that if they could bring you in, throw a ton of money at you, and you'd be interested, but if they limited your ability
No, only if I retained... only I would not do it. I won't go down the Art Bell road that he went down because that man went through hell after telling the truth for decades. I would never sacrifice editorial control of my show for nobody. And I don't think that would be acceptable to Fox.
That's what it would be. You'd have to have editorial control. Yeah. But imagine that. They would say, fine. People believe you. You know, people believe you and people are willing to listen to you. That might be how they have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
I'm going to reveal something right here on the air. Are you ready? Blockbuster revelation. Some of my inner circle knows this. At the height of the 2016 election, I was contacted by an Italian company that wanted to buy out my website. And as I did some backtracking with a couple of sources I have access to, they had strong ties to CNN.
Wow.
There you go. And what they wanted to pay me was not really worth it. I mean,
right.
I even said, I said, why are you lowballing me? They go, this is a great offer. I go, no, it isn't. Maybe for 1 year it's a great offer. They go, well, you can continue to write and write what you say. Been down that road. Never going to go there again. Hey, we just got a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to give you a chance to talk about your book, but more importantly, how people can follow your good work by getting your good book.
Well, if you're somebody that is familiar with this with these topics that we've been talking about, what you'll find is, or what you know, is that there's somebody in your life, it might be a friend, might be a family member, that just has a very difficult time getting it. You know, maybe they think you're a bit nuts, maybe they think that you've ruined a Thanksgiving dinner or two by bringing up 9/11 or whatever. But you know you're on to something, and you, but you just don't know what it is that's going to turn them on to something. To me, in my life, it was Building 7, you know, on 9/11. I think a lot of people feel that way. I know, obviously, I'm not alone in that. But once there's something that triggers, you see that and you go, okay, that's total baloney. If that is, what else is out there? So you never really know what it's going to be. What's going to be the trigger point for someone to sort of wake up, as they say. So I tackle so many topics in the book, and they're serious, of course. They're very serious topics. These are some of them life or death. But I add a sense of humor to it that makes it palatable for people, that you can make it through without going, oh my God, this is so depressing. It's funny. There's funny parts in it. I have funny quotes. I have a way of looking at things that's a bit, maybe on the dark sense of humor side. So if there's somebody in your life that you think maybe would be open to something like this, or maybe, you're not really sure what topic it is, just get them, and you're done being the bad guy, or you're tired of people saying, enough already, stop talking to me about all this. Just send them the book. It's available on Amazon in a paperback.
Let's talk about how we get it.
Yeah, it's on Amazon as a Kindle, and so it's digital, or as a paperback. It's 540 pages. It's a big one, but it's a lot of fun. I you'll find some of the chapter names are a bit unusual. I had some fun with them. I've got does this tinfoil hat make me look crazy? I've got JETS, Jets, which is surprisingly not about the football team, but more about the Creflo dollar that convinced his parishioners to give him $65 million so he could buy a Gulfstream jet. We've got to Everyone Must Check In, which, as we know, is about Sandy Hook. Tavistock is not a music festival, if you're familiar with the Tavistock Institute.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I have some fun with the topics, and so I bring a bit of an unusual sense of humor, but it works for people. The response has been fantastic, with the exception of the one guy that didn't like that I was critical about the NASA stuff, and he called me every name in the book. But that's okay. If you want to also call me every name in the book, you can go to my Facebook page, which is the Octopus of Global Control on Facebook. It's fun. I have videos that I've made. I have some videos that other people have made that I put on there. It's a great visual component to the book. So check it out. And by the way, you can also go on. You can read 30. You can read 30 pages of the book for free.
Okay,
so if
great.
You don't like it, don't buy it.
Amazon and Kindle, Charlie. We are so really out of time. We got to scoot next week.
Awesome.
Steve Quayle, Tom Horn, Charlie. Thanks, Ben. You were awesome. Good having you on. First time. We'll do it again. We'll see everybody back here again next week. Go out and have a great week. God bless.